This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under Stewardship Resources or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a Deacon and Trustee Seminar held on August 5, 2025 in Arthur, Illinois.
So the topic here today, how to require accountability and achieve restoration. This is maybe a little bit on the side now where the rubber hits the road, right? I have really appreciated a lot of the comments that have been made and things that have been shared. And definitely have been an encouragement and a blessing. And I will probably be sharing a little bit of my story because I will be coming at it from the other side. So I'm not necessarily coming at it from the deacon side. And so as we think of this topic, there's two portions here, is how to acquire accountability as a deacon. How do you go about to get that accountability? And then also, how do you achieve, once you get that accountability, how do you achieve a turnaround and then have a person that becomes, like it says here, begins giving back instead of being always drawing on the church or on the brotherhood, but they once drained the system, now they are feeding back into the system. And so I'm just going to give you just a little bit of my personal story because it's going to be a view from looking at the deacon. So my parents moved to South America in 1967. I was 3 years old, and I went to the Old Colony schools with the Old Colony Mennonites. So by the time I reached 9 or 10, I just knew High German and Pennsylvania Dutch and a little bit of Low German from talking. So, ich war sedetsch sauvagrat, okay? I didn't have basically no English or Spanish in me. We then, of course, ran out of money and came back to the States. And then when we returned, we bought around 150 acres of solid jungle. Just solid jungle. So just imagine out here, you would go buy 150 acres of woods, and now you figure out what you're going to do for a living. Well, my dad had a lot of ideas. He was quite an entrepreneur. And so he put in a sawmill because what else are you going to do if you have all these woods? But the problem was everybody else was doing that as well. And so there really wasn't any money in it. So it came to his mind that rather than doing what everybody else is doing, let's start up a milk route. Let's encourage everyone. As soon as they have some trees cut, plant in among the trees, you plant grass. You know, because it takes a long time to burn everything up and take all the roots out. And but we had no electric, we had no cooling system, nothing. So somehow he convinced all of the neighbors to get out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning, stumble around out in the pastures, and myself included, trying to get the cows up to milk at 3 o'clock in the morning. And of course, the cows did not understand that. But what are they supposed to do? They probably thought many a times, I really wonder what is wrong with these human beings. But since we have no way to cool the milk, it needed to be milked and taken warm to wherever he was selling it at the time. Then there was an accident and he was killed. And so there was a family, a mother with three girls and one boy. And I was the youngest and I was 14 years old. And so that was my first experience with the deacon. And being I was just a little bit big for my size, maybe, and could do a full day's work and pretty well knew all the ins and outs of milking cows and all of that, They just assumed that a 14-year-old would know how to manage 150 acres of jungle and some cows and the mother and some sisters, right? And you probably chuckle when you think about that. How many of you would turn your 14-year-old son loose to take care of his mom and his sisters and expect that they're going to make it? And the interesting thing is that, and this is good advice for you as deacons, as you work with situations, be very careful not to promise something that you're not sure that you're able to do. And so, obviously, my father had some debt when he was killed. And so the deacon and the ministry team just told us that, somehow the church will make up that money and we'll somehow pay off the debt. Well, it never happened. And so you can imagine, here is a 14-year-old boy looking at 150 acres of woods, and I had dug enough stumps and picked up enough roots with my dad to know what that meant, you know, what that all involved. And it was like, it's going to be impossible. Well, we had a local lady that came by, and she saw the need. She saw this, and this was not from our church. It was one of the Old Colony Mennonites. She was a single lady, and she had a little store. So she came to my mother, and she said, look, I know you're going to need some income, so why doesn't your son come and work for me? So every day, bike a couple miles and do a little bit of stocking shelves, whatever the little hardware store needed. And we had about $3 to $5, and that was enough to buy our groceries and give a little bit of tithe at church. Mom would tell, I was a little bit, like, I almost didn't quite understand how all that worked, but she said we had enough to buy groceries, and a little, by the time we bought groceries and put a little bit in tithe, that money was all gone per week. The ironic thing was, I don't ever remember the deacon showing up and having conversation with me or asking what our needs are, what we can do, and maybe he did with mom, I don't know. But the church never paid the debt, and it was just kind of quiet. And so we struggled there for about 3 years, and then the family said, look, we're not getting anywhere, we can't pay off our debt, you're going to have to go to the U.S., you're going to have to go back to the States. I was 17-year-old, and you're going to have to go back to the U.S., and you're going to have to find a job, and you're going to have to pay off the debt, pay off whatever, and then come back. Well, for a 17-year-old, that's quite adventurous, right? And it's like, this should be doable. But it always nagged at me, you know, why did the church not do their part? You know, why did they say a few things? But my mom was very wise. And that is the very first thing I want to look at here on the topic today here, is the blame game. So many times when we are wanting to help the trouble, I really like the other topics and sit in, and there's a lot of things that were covered, but the first thing is the blame game. And my mom was really, really good at that. Even though the church had promised that they would try to help us with that debt, and they were just as poor as we were. Like, they didn't have any resources. And, you know, as time went on, that became clear to me. But because my mom was able to convey to me that it doesn't, blaming is not going to get you anywhere. And if you want to turn someone around, or like if you want to begin to get accountability, you have to get people off of blaming everything else. And I just really like this And maybe that's why God put that the first thing in the Bible. He just put it right there, the first thing. It says, and we have the story there, you know, it says that God, the Lord God took the man and put him in the garden of Eden to dress it and keep it. And the Lord commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but the tree of knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die. And the Lord said, it's not good that man should be alone. Interesting. He gave the first commandment, and he just gave it to the man. And then he created the woman. Now, here's the interesting part. When the woman and the serpent were having a conversation, and the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, ye shall not eat of it. And then she added a little extra. She said, and neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. Now, the interesting thing is, Adam got the commandment. It doesn't say, so a lot of these examples we have in the Bible, like, God lets us fill it in a little bit, and we can fill it in a little bit this way, and we can fill it in a little bit that way, but it still doesn't necessarily take in the meaning. So did Adam was the primary one responsible to pass that information on to Eve. And from what we can tell what she said, she received the message. But the question is, where did Eve get the part that they were not supposed to touch it either? And my sister said, I always like to tease a little bit. So we're going to do a little bit of that here today. You know, when ladies go shopping for material, what do they do? There's two things that ladies do when they are material shopping. They're always, that's especially how my wife does, she'll go over and feel this one, and then she'll go over and feel this one, and then she'll feel this one. No, that color's not quite right. No, that not that color, not this color. And if Eve was normal, then she probably kept looking at the tree. Now, Adam, you said that we're not supposed to eat of this, right? Well, this apple looks really silky smooth. Like, I would just like to touch it. And Adam is probably there freaking out. No, 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 no. Don't even go there, because the minute you're going to touch that, then you're going to want to hold it, and you're going to want to feel it some more, and you're going to want to look at it. And then you probably, like, it's probably better just not to touch it. Let's just not touch it. You know, sometimes when we require accountability, we might actually add some stuff on that isn't necessarily necessary. Well, anyways, we know how the story went here. Adam was responsible to pass on the information. And it says that he was there, and when the woman saw that a tree was good for food, and it was pleasant to the eyes, a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took the fruit of it and gave to also unto her husband with her. So he was there with her. And she probably, Adam, did he say just not to eat it, or did he say not to touch it? And Adam says, well, he didn't say not to touch it. So it made it easier for her to get, because she knew that if it was her that made that extra stipulation, then she knew that she was not going to die if she gets it and holds it. And so it actually could have, theoretically, made the temptation worse, be that as it may. The whole point I want out of this is that someone in the church, in the ministry, has to pass on the information. And so when we are in the position where we have to require accountability, things are not quite as easy and are a little more messy. And so as we require, and as all of you know, the very first thing that happens, well, it's because of this, it's because of that, it's because of this, and it's because of that. That was one thing that my mother taught me right out of the gate. We don't blame God. We don't blame the church. We don't blame Dad. He's dead and gone, and he was trying his best. We ended, like, what do we need to do to go forward? like getting that accountability, not saying, well, if this would have, or if that would have, or what is our responsibility now? And so that's why they sent me to the U.S., because that was our responsibility. It was our responsibility of our family to take care of our family's debt. If someone wanted to help, praise the Lord. But if nobody did, we needed to take accountability for our family. And I have been blessed by that teaching, that my mom was so faithful in teaching. Because can you imagine what would happen if we would have turned to bitterness and we would have accused the ministers for this or that? No. One thing I'm very thankful about the deacon, he was very good at giving haircuts. And that's what I remember him for. He was able to give me a lot of good haircuts. But I don't remember anything of his deacon work. But he's went to be with the Lord a while back already, and we've had a good relationship. Maybe he completely forgot about it. I never said anything. He never said anything. But as far as I know, we are not having an issue when we meet up in heaven with each other. And we need to understand that we cannot, as much as we want to, and as much as we would like to somehow pass the blame on to someone else. But let's not do that. Going down to the next slide, who lied? Now, this was one of the things that was very interesting for me. So I went to school with the O'Connor Mennonite children, and so I know that culture. And then I also spent a lot of time with the Latin, with the native Paraguayans. And it is really interesting what we would call people's view of things. And some people have said you can call it a world view, or you can call it a world grid view, or there's different things. But how people add it. If your world view is that somebody can be blamed for something, did you realize that you can also take the blame? And you can also be responsible if there is someone to take the blame for someone else? You see, that goes a long ways when you are wanting to require accountability, is when you understand that you can take the blame for your own things, but you can also take the blame and better. Most of the topics talked about how we can give extra, that we can give of our time, we can give of our talents, we can give of our money. Why? Because we are actually taking the blame for someone else's misfortune. That is possible. You see, that completely changes your worldview. And so as I was growing up with the Latins, all of a sudden it became clear to me that the Latins look at lying completely different than we. And I was trying to figure out, well, where in the scriptures would it say something? Well, right here we have it, 1 Kings 13. And I'm not going to go in a lot of detail. All of us know the word of the Lord came to this man of God in Judah, and he was supposed to, the 10 tribes of Israel had just pulled away, and they had made two golden calves down, and they were worshiping those instead of coming back to Jerusalem. And the Lord told a prophet in Judah, go down and curse the altar. And he got down there, and the king was sacrificing, and he cursed the altar. The thing just fell apart. The king got mad, stretched out his hand, and he was going to settle up with this prophet. And as the king put his hand out, his hand withered, and he couldn't do anything about it. And then the king got scared, and he humbled himself right there. Now, God required accountability, and he accepted it right away. The king accepted accountability right there. Now, that would really make the deacon's work a lot easier, right? If we could just have that accountability when reality hits. But it's not often that way. The man of God prayed, and the king's hand was healed. And the king said, the king was very grateful. He said, come on home with me. And he said, refresh yourself. Like, I'll give you some water. I'll give you some and to my house. And this is what the man of God said. He said, for so was it charged me by the word of the Lord, saying, eat no bread, nor drink water, nor turn again by the same way that thou camest. Here was a man that had the power to take his life, and he didn't have any problem to tell that king the reality. Look, I came, this is what I was told to do. You could have taken my life. God made you accountable. You accept accountability, but there's no way that I can give up my accountability because I am accountable to go home and not eat or drink and go home a different way. And the king honored that. So this man goes on his way home and he stops to rest. But there was two young men there. Their dad was a prophet as well. They run home and tell their dad. Their dad goes back and he says, "Are you the prophet from Judah?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "An angel told me to tell you to come back." First of all, he just told him, "Come home and refresh yourself." And then the prophet again told him. Two times this man stated his own accountability. And then this other man said, "Well, I am a prophet too." So this other person brought himself up to the same level. He said, "I'm a prophet too. An angel came and spoke to me." But it says he lied unto him. And then sometimes we wonder, why did that older prophet then have the privilege to condemn the younger prophet? Well, the Bible says, "In two or three witnesses, everything shall be established." This younger prophet witnessed to himself twice what his accountability was supposed to be. And that is part of when you are dealing with situations, you have to sit people down and ask them, like in the real world or in the situation, let's just take you away from your situation, what would the accountability look like? And often they will know what that accountability should look like. But for some reason, it's so easy to, you know, the easiest person to deceive? Yourself. Yourself is the easiest person to deceive. This story shows it right here. If you live in the Latin world, they have no problem. They will come and lie right to your face. And if you catch them at it, they chuckle. "Oh, well, I see that you were awake. I see that you were paying attention." If you don't catch it and you fall in the trap, guess what they do? They come the next day and say, "Hey, I got the good end of the deal on you yesterday. You realize that?" "Yeah, you sinner. Why did you lie to me?" "I didn't lie. I was just checking to see if you were awake. It's your problem that you didn't catch that I was trying to pull the wool over you." See, that's their worldview. Now, if someone has that worldview and says, "I'm not accountable because somebody lied to me, somebody, no. You see, I think the deacon had a good intentions that they were going to help us, but they didn't have any more resources than we did. And maybe it wasn't possible. Do you think I could take that excuse and say, "Okay, well, I'm not going to pay off my dad's debt"? I was 25 when I got married, and my wife helped me pay off the last debt that I had. So my wife and I got to start out from zero. And I can testify the day that God has been faithful and he has blessed. I have a lot more than a lot of people have. Who is responsible? "For every man shall bear his own burden." That's usually step number three. If you're not willing to bear your own burden. You see, God has a plan for all of us. And sometimes it looks like we have a lot bigger burden than what other people have. Like just a lot more misfortune happened to my life than it does to this this other family. On Sunday, we had a burial for a stillborn child in the congregation. And our new bishop, this was his first small child funeral. We had an older man pass away a couple weeks ago. And there the bishop was having graveside, he was having the burial committal. And he has a little daughter, just 2-3 months old, my grandchild. You know, is life fair? No, absolutely not. Life is exactly what God has planned for you, and we need to take responsibility for that. But we also have leadership. So the second point is leadership, the people that watch for your soul. And we have to understand, as we're born as an individual. I have 2 hands, 2 feet. I can kind of take care of myself. But if I want to be of any value here and upon this earth, I'm going to have to join the greater community. If I don't join the greater community, and usually the first step in joining the greater community is you will either find a husband or a wife. And now you have a start of a community, and then children come along, and now you have the extended family, and now as you get older, you become part of the school community, and then the youth group community, and then the church community. Like, if you want to be useful, you're going to have to become part of something, but if you're part of something, that part requires leadership. If you begin to make business decisions, if you begin to make then it requires leadership. And if that, even if other people may have messed up your leadership or has messed up your plan or have destroyed what you have, or maybe nature has destroyed it, it's still your responsibility. But it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to go and ask for the truth. Like, what are some true things that I can do or that the community can do to help me get to where I need to be? That is taking responsibility, is seeking the truth. Find out the facts. Find out what needs to be done. And then take responsibility. And those of you that are in the deacon position or even in church leadership position, we need to speak the truth in love. It's so often easy. I just love that the example that was given where the deacon showed up and the man was just sure of this and this and this. Because he had this worldview of the deacon, right? And the deacon came in and presented a complete different worldview, and it just messed up his view. That's what we need to do. We need to speak the truth in love. We need to mess up people's view, but do it in love. Like, do it in a way that we acquire accountability. And then is where the hard part comes in. There needs to be a directional change. And probably those of us that are bishops, we understand that a little bit. There comes a point in time when it just has to stop. Like, there has to be a directional change. And we have to be just up front. Like, there has to be things done different. You cannot keep on doing the same thing and expect different results. You just can't. That's an old saying that has been said over and over. You just can't simply keep doing the same thing and expect different results. Remember when King David, he was just enjoying life. His soldiers were out fighting. He was up on the roof, and he was getting a little carried away and things. And then Nathan came and told him a story, and King David said, "This is it." He said, "It stops right here. That man is going to be put to death," or whatever. And guess what Nathan did? He said, "Well, that's exactly what I came for. It stops right here. This is where it stops." If you are going to have any accountability, at some point in time, you as leaders have to be willing to do that. You're going to have to say, "Look, the road ends here. There is nothing else but to turn around and go back, but do it in love." How do we do that? How do we now get these people that had once been so draining the system, now they're willing to turn around? Share the load. Bear the burden with them. Chop the wood with them. Bear the burden with them. And I love this verse because this is a favorite one of the Latins as well. It says in the Bible that whoso has this world's goods, which means money, you're supposed to loan to me. And we're like, no, it says whoever has this world's goods, good. Everything that's good. And probably the goodest thing, right? Bad English. Probably the best thing I can give you is just some good solid advice, not money. Oh. You see, there is so much good that you need to be able to, that you can give, that doesn't include money. And I think it was mentioned here today already. When we think of a need, we think of our pocketbook. Well, you know why? Because that is the easiest thing to do. There is nothing easier than pull your pocketbook out, and them dollar bills are really slippery, and you slip one out and hand it over, and then you're done. No, there is a lot of good things, and that is what, you know, to me, if my deacon would have came and said, okay, you're 14 years old, you got 150 acres of woods here, like, let's put a plan together, let's cut down one tree a day. Well, that would have made a huge difference. Like, I would have had a goal. I would have had something instead of just looking at all those trees. You know what I got good at? I got good at calling the monkeys. I got good at making the same monkey noises as the monkeys, and they would understand what I'm saying. I don't know if they did. I thought they did because they would come, or they wouldn't run away at least. Make a list. Give an account of your stewardship. We all know the story of the steward. You have to, like, there's nothing like getting on reality. Recently, I sold out my share in the cabinet shop, and things were a little bit rocky there, and I was a little bit perturbed, so I got my recording out on my phone, and so I recorded this nice little side of the story that I thought was my side of the story, and I was going to hand it to the other partners. Well, I said my story on the recorder, and then I listened to myself. Then I listened to it again. I already felt better because I had already, you know, I had already sat down and I had kind of countered the cost. Like, nah, like, I had gotten off my chest, you know, so I never sent it, which probably was a very good thing not to do. Might have given the deacon some extra work. But sit down and count the cost. Like, sit down, have the person that you're working with, like, let's just sit down and analyze. Let's get it on paper. You know, sometimes when people write their grievances down, just like I did, I had to chuckle at myself. I recorded my grievances, and then I kind of had to chuckle because it wasn't worth sending. And, you know, sometimes that's just how it works. And if I've taken the Zacchaeus commitment, and if you can get your people to make the Zacchaeus commitment. You know, he went and he sought Jesus. He went and he wanted to hear what Jesus, and when Jesus told come down, he immediately took Jesus. I mean, can you imagine if you have, and I always tell people, look, whatever congregation you go and put in 100%, and you'll be amazed at what difference that makes. Just go put in 100%, because we want that in anything that you do. We want that in our marriages. We want each partner to put in 100%. We want the children to do 100% in school. We want the youth group to be 100% involved. We want all that. Just put 100%. And all of a sudden, things just look different. And he said, if I've done anything wrong to any man, he said, I'm going to go back and I'm going to make it right. And even had some stipulations of what he's going to do. He's going to give fourfold. Why? A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. Help that person produce fruit. If that person can produce with everything that he does, everything that he does, he can have a little bit of joy, a little bit of peace, a little bit of long-suffering, a little bit of gentleness, a little bit of goodness, a little bit of faith, a little bit of meekness, and a little bit of temperance, that says there is no law at how much fruit you can produce. Now, once you have someone convinced to produce fruit like this, they will not be a drain on the system. May God bless you, and as you, as deacons and leaders, bless your congregation. Thank you.